Welcome to Social Distance Central. Wait, that's what this is now? You're on Sportsnet 650. Here's Bit Nizar and Brendan Batchelor.
It is Social Distance Central, the show with the COVID name that isn't about COVID during the COVID era. I'm Bit Nizar. With me, as always, the voice of the Canucks on Sportsnet 650. It's Brendan Batchelor. Batch, how are you?
I'm okay, all things considered. It's certainly been a thought-provoking weekend with what's happening south of the border and happening around the world. And I know we're going to get into it on the show here, but I've done a lot of thinking over the last couple of days, and I know you have as well.
Yeah, and that's it's funny that we call the show Social Distance Central on a day and on a weekend where it felt a little bit like, wow, there was division socially as far as a society. We may have brought each other closer a little bit as far as seeing people rally together and start working towards a solution for a problem that has existed for a long time. And as we get into this, I want to lay out a couple of, don't want to say ground rules, but just a couple of thoughts. As we get into this discussion, there are no absolutes in this discussion. I want everyone to understand and appreciate that off the top. I understand that a lot of what happened evolved and escalated really poorly into some rioting, right? And there's a difference between protests and rioting. And this isn't necessarily a conversation about who started what. And guess what? There aren't going to be absolutes in that discussion. Some people, I'm sure, started one thing. Some people, I'm sure, started another thing. As far as absolutes in regards to police brutality, yes, there are many a cop who are faced with tough questions, and this is about police brutality. The absolute conversation is not every cop is bad. So that conversation goes in every which direction here, okay? Let's be honest about that. The other thing, I'm going to apologize in advance if I get emotional, because in exploring my own thoughts over the course of the weekend, I was moved of, A, am I doing enough? B, what else can we do as a society? C, reliving some of my own moments when I've dealt with, again, this evolves past police brutality into the bigger conversation of racism, and more specifically into sports, how I've had to deal with that. And so as this conversation continues, if it gets to a point where I'm getting emotional, I'm just going to apologize on ahead of that. And I tried sitting down for most of the past 24 hours and really trying to write something out so I could sit here in a collective way and present to you. But I didn't want it to come off as scripted. I didn't want it to come off as manufactured, because I wear my heart on my sleeve most of the times, perhaps not necessarily online, as many people would say, but or see me. But as I was trying to write something out, I could feel the anger coming with me, and I didn't want it to come across. I didn't want to come across that way. And so I just thought, you and I talked about a batch, and we just felt if we had an honest, open, real conversation and a genuine conversation, that's how we could best display our emotions moving forward.
Yeah. And, we talked about this through the weekend, texting back and forth about how we wanted to address this conversation today on the show, because I'm sure there are plenty of people out there that will say, this is a sports station, you should be talking about sports, leave this stuff to people that cover news. But as you rightly point out, this is not just a news issue. This is not just an American issue. This is not an issue that is solely based on the people that are victimized by it. It's an issue that impacts us all, and it's an issue that we all need to be working more diligently towards correcting. So, I'll be honest, when we were talking over the weekend, the idea, you floated the idea to me that we didn't have to talk about this on the show today, but to me, we have to. In the past, for many people, it has been too easy to not have this conversation, because it's not an easy conversation to have, but it's one that we have to continue to have and we can't turn away from. And we can't say, you know, oh, that's something I don't want to talk about or think about because it doesn't directly affect me. It may not directly affect you, but, you know, it does because it's affecting your neighbors. It's affecting your friends. You know, in some people's cases, it's affecting your family as well. It's something that touches everyone in society. And so, you know, we have to address this today and we have to continue to address it and make sure that we are calling attention to racism when we see it, when, you know, we see people experience it, when people are experiencing it, and say that we have had enough of this. And, you know, it's past the time to turn a blind eye to issues like this. So that's why we felt it was important to talk about this today. And that's why we are going to have this open discussion. And you're right. It's something as well where I thought long and hard about specifically what I wanted to say. And, you know, obviously, as a white man, I do not understand what it is like to experience racism. So in many ways, I feel like a fraud for talking about this topic today because I do not understand and I never will understand. But the important thing is that, you know, I try to learn, I try to listen, I try to be more aggressive in calling out and highlighting racism when you see it in daily life. That to me is the important message that everyone needs to be taking away from the things that are happening south of the border right now. And, you know, it is really heartening. And that's, you know, again, it was a disappointing and sad weekend for many reasons, but it was also, you know, a heartening weekend to see people come together like they did in downtown Vancouver yesterday and to unify under a common message that, you know, enough is enough when it comes to police brutality, when it comes to, you know, racism in general. And, you know, just because this is something that's happening in the United States doesn't mean that we are exempt from this issue in Canada or that we don't have plenty of our own work to do.
Yeah, I experienced a lot of emotions over the weekend. Like, you're sad to watch some of it, and you understand how chaotic it was, and it was very confusing. And at the same time, it was very inspiring. But I'll say this, one of the first emotions I felt, I could feel my own fatigue in this how tired I was of, I was, it was inspired by to see the large factions of the white community finally pick up the baton in this race of, hey, this is a real issue. Now we collectively have to step up. And in that moment, in recognizing that, that's when I felt my own fatigue of, okay, the fight is actually being brought forward by a community that the minority community really needed in this discussion. And that's where I felt my own fatigue, where I'm always going to be active, and this is something I'm always going to have to deal with, obviously. And I can do my own better job of calling it out as well. But seeing that community rally and step up in ways we necessarily haven't seen before by action, not by word, not by posting on Instagram and on Twitter, by actually stepping up. And I commend everyone that stepped forward in the Vancouver protests at the Vancouver Art Gallery and doing it in such a manner that was peacefully and respectful. But that was one of my first emotions of, I felt my fatigue over the years finally catch up to me, that I could take a break for a moment. And while you still have to be active and vigilant in all this, but to see a community rise up and understand finally, holy smokes, we have to take charge in this.
Yeah,
that was encouraging.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, to tie it into the world of sports, Evander Kane has talked a lot about over the last few days, that, you know, as much as, you know, athletes of color are always going to speak out, and we've seen Colin Kaepernick and, you know, the whole issue with people kneeling during the anthem in the United States, and the debate around that has raged for years. But Evander Kane, you know, brought up a really good point, and it's something that we are seeing, you know, through the last few days, that it can't just be the athletes and the people that are affected by this that speak out on it if things are going to change. And you see a guy like Logan Couture on the San Jose Sharks, who, you know, makes his own public statement. And, you know, Evander Kane talks about, you know, wanting to see the likes of Sidney Crosby and Tom Brady come out and make statements on this issue. And he's absolutely right. You know, and that's sort of something that, you know, really has hit home with me over the last few days is the fact that we all have an obligation to, again, speak out against racism, to make our voices heard, to use whatever platform we have to try to enact change in a positive way. And, you know, in the past, I'll admit I've been guilty of, you know, being upset about racism and being angry about these issues, but, you know, being angry in a moment and then moving on and continuing with my life. And, you know, for someone in my situation as a white man, it is too easy to forget that there are people living with this on a daily basis. So that is my pledge to myself. And, you know, I see a lot of people being active on social media now, and that's great, and going to the protests, and that's great. But that can't just be for this weekend. That can't just be for a few days right now because it's in the news. This has to be a paradigm shift in the way that we approach this issue as a society. It's time to act. And the days of looking past things like this because it's too easy or too convenient, those days are gone. That's my pledge, right? You know, in my own mind and the way I want to approach this. And I'm heartened to see that it seems like so many other people have you know, had that same thought as well. But it has to continue. It can't just be a few tweets on social media over a few days.
And this discussion here is not to come across as, hey, we've got all the answers. Because you know what? I'll be honest, I don't. And more importantly, I don't think I'm going to be able to figure it out in the next 48 minutes, right?
No. And
so that's why I want to bring up the idea of, okay, yes, the participation level has risen. And that's the energy that needs to carry forward if we intend to defeat this. And obviously, progress has been made over the course of X amount of years. You know, you can say 60 years, you can say 400 years. But the thing with framing this conversation of, hey, is this enough progress in the short term? This is not a negotiation of, hey, is this not, if we concede this and you guys get this. This is talking about equality of life and quality of life. That progress here is pivotal, but this is about fairness. And this is about change at an institutional level that has never been undertaken before. And it's going to be difficult. And it's going to be challenging. And a lot of people who are within the system and within those institutions are almost, while they have criminal acts in regards to some of the murders that we've seen, I almost wonder, Batch, and again, I'm just speaking here, I almost wonder that because they get filtered into the system, do they get trained to think that way? And are they then products of the system? That do they get turned into criminals because they're victims of the system?
Yeah, and that's, you know, a hard question to answer. But at the same time, you know, you look at the economic factors that play into issues like this, and you know, the number of minorities in the United States that grow up in poverty because of the system in that country specifically, and you know, you could say that is a fact for sure. There's one thing I think we also need to point out in this conversation, and I touched on it earlier, is that we're up here in Canada, mm-hmm. and certainly we are not seeing murders at the same rate that we are in the United States, whether it's, you know, George Floyd or Ahmaud Arbery. These seem to be like you see the news in the U.S. and it feels like a black person is being killed unjustly almost daily or weekly. That's not happening in Canada, but that doesn't mean that we can wash our hands and say, okay, Canada's great. We don't have a racism problem here. Man, look at the States. I'm really glad I don't live there. Mm-hmm. That's not at all the case, because while it may not, you know, be take shape in the form of visible, regular murder, I'm sure you could speak to it. And you know, if you're comfortable telling personal stories, you can. You obviously don't have to, but I'm sure that you could, if you wanted to, tell many stories of racism you've experienced here in Canada.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about this before. When as recently as last year, when the Don Cherry comments came to fruition, and this conversation about hockey culture got brought up, and Sat and I had a round table on the program, and you know, we talked about, like, yes, there's a cultural problem within hockey, but it speaks to bigger issues outside of hockey, that if you fix the outside, suddenly inside hockey would look a lot different. And you know, me myself, I at that time I said, if you're offended by those comments, you know, if I wanted to, I could just screenshot some DMs I get routinely about a minority talking about hockey, and I could tweet those. I choose not to, but I think the white community, I think for this weekend, and considering the police brutality down south and how many white citizens were attacked by police, I think there's finally an understanding of, oh, damn, this is bigger than we ever really appreciated. And I think the one lesson I want everyone to take away from is listen. Listen. And, you know, we do these shows, Batch, and part of this is a lot about debating for these shows and who can have the next take. And in doing so, and social media is much in that way too, but in doing so, we lose the ability to listen. And I can share these stories, go on, and I've brought them up before. But if the application of listening to those stories doesn't take the next step, then it doesn't really matter who shares what story, right? It's you've got to understand that people are crying out for help, and now you have to be able to take in what they're saying and continue to move on.
Yeah, and it's not just listening, it's also learning, right? Yeah. Where, you know, for example, you know, you learn how maybe you in the past had enabled racism to carry on without knowing it, and ways that you can work towards helping correct these issues, ways that you can help people in your life that experience racism on a regular basis. And you're right, it's, you know, especially in terms of the conversation in the United States, there was a really good piece on The Athletic where a number of their black sports writers wrote about experiences that they have faced with racism. And, you know, for someone, again, I'm a white man from Canada, just hearing the staggering number of times that these people have been pulled over or stopped by police or detained or viewed in a certain way because of the color of their skin, you know, it's normal. It's part of their life. It's something that they have to kind of build an armor that they have to put on every day when they go out the door so that you can experience this in your daily life. And, you know, I think I've always understood that racism exists and is ever present. But, you know, for me anyway, hearing direct stories from people about how much it impacts their lives is really powerful. And, you know, it makes you realize that you have no idea what people who are victims of racism are going through, right? Like, perfect example, we were talking about how we were going to talk about this on the show yesterday, and I was thinking about it a lot, and I went out for a run yesterday afternoon doing our social distance run on Sunday afternoons. And, you know, the thought came to me that I have never in my life had to worry for my safety going for a run or walking out my front door or walking down the street to the grocery store. And, you know, these are things that, again, you think about and you realize in the past, but because it's not part of your daily experience, it's too easy to forget. And that's where we need to, as a society, move more towards empathy and realizing and remembering and being consistently vigilant in understanding that this is people's daily experience. And it's not just in the United States. You know, it happens here in Canada as well. And we, every single one of us, have a duty to constantly be on guard to prevent racism from having, you know,
from spreading,
the kind of, from spreading and from kind of having, yeah, the kind of power in society that it does right now.
Yeah, the term you use there, actually use two terms I want to expand on. Like, vigilance is the cost right now. Like, that's what you've got to be prepared to do, to constantly call it out, to constantly eradicate it from society. The other term that you use there, talking about the sports writers down south, is that coat of armor that you have. And, you know, just as you say it, it hit me that it's like, yeah, I wake up thinking about that, of a coping mechanism, I guess, to some degree, of understanding my own coat of armor. And it just become something I've just developed reflexively now, that when I go on air to speak about sports, I have that coat of armor that I put on myself to say, I understand that some comments are going to come my way at some point in time, that I know now how to deflect that. I've had to habitually create that I can now let it slide off my back and continue. But does it stop it from happening? No, but it's, I've created an infrastructure within myself to understand, I know people are going to say something and it doesn't matter at all, and I can continue. But that's something that's a process that I've had to learn upon myself, to have this trait in me to be able to do. And it's difficult. And there's comments even today, not necessarily in the moment, but reflecting on some of the texts that have come in over the past 6 hours from our stations. Like, I can go read through these. And these aren't exactly pleasant texts that we're getting into our 650 text message inbox. But this is daily. Like, this is two conversations that happened on the station today during the starting lineup with James and Perry, and then Scott Rintoul later on the Scott Rintoul show. And this is daily for many minority sports writers and for personalities. This was a snippet for those three guys that had a conversation earlier, and I didn't hear all of it. I heard parts of Scott's show, parts of starting lineup. But, like, that's the daily experience that people have to go through in our community. And when we talk about why athletes speak out, why they're not, quote unquote, sticking to sports, this is why. This is the movement that, if you weren't willing to listen, this is what I talked about listening before. If you weren't willing to listen 4 years ago, 10 years ago, however long, if you weren't willing to listen, the result of indifference turns out what you saw this past weekend. That a community is pleading for assistance and reform. And when those calls aren't heard, it evolves and evolves into the final form of what we saw. And nobody wants what we saw over the weekend to that intense degree. But when it's kind of like an irrational child. It's not about the act when a child acts irrationally. It's not about that. It's more often than not a child begging for attention. And that's what this was. This was citizens who had some riots, but if you're focusing on the riots and not on the actual message itself, that's part of the problem too.
Yeah, and not focusing on the hundreds of years of inaction that has led to a point now, and, you know, we've seen it many times throughout history, that, you know, it becomes enough for people. And there is rage that boils over. And, you know, not saying that, you know, rioting is good or, you know, acting violently is good, but you can understand the frustration behind people that are consistently marginalized, you know, for many, many years, for their entire lives. and told that they don't matter as much as someone that is standing next to them. So you understand the anger. And again, you talk about listening, you know, we talk about learning as well. But on top of that, there needs to be action. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I obviously don't consider myself racist, but there have been times in the past where I could have spoken up, or I could have been more vocal, or I could have said something, and I didn't. And that is something that I need to personally improve upon. And again, you know, in your own mind, it's easy to say, I agree with what Colin Kaepernick did, or I agree with the sentiments of the protesters. But you need to verbalize it. You need to put it out into the world. You need to be a part of change, whether that's by, you know, using social media, as many people have, whether that's by donating to organizations that do great work every single day to try and limit the spread of racism, whether that's going out and protesting yourself. Whatever form that takes, it has to be listening, it has to be learning, and most importantly of all, it has to be action as well.
And I saw this thing over the weekend, and I guess I partially apologize because I don't want any of this to be part shaming, but I saw this diversity BC thing. I'm not sure if I even got it correct, but it, like a tweet going around of, hey, tag some people, and this is about creating a diverse BC. And that's kind of what I'm talking about, because that is, for those of you that reposted it, it's great, and I totally understand. But you have to understand that the apathy of doing that, of just saying, hey, I've posted this and I feel better about myself, that is part of the issue. And that's why I was encouraged at some points to see all the action this weekend, because people put themselves in the line of fire to some degree to try to make a difference. But doing it just to make a post to feel better about yourself, that is part of the apathy. And so I saw that post, and I got tagged in it too, and I didn't spread it, because we don't want to create an emotion, a feel where you just feel like you are doing enough, because just posting about it just to spread the message and share it to your followers is not really enough. We needed people, like we saw this weekend, to finally take up some of the fight. And that goes to, with, if you want to expand this to the sports world, there's a lot of people claiming and demanding statements from leagues and teams and all that. I regret to inform you that these leagues and teams, while the message is important, aren't going to solve racism in a press release statement.
No,
they're just not.
Certainly not.
And there's a lot of calls. I see the text messages into our inbox. 650-650. Demanding and wondering why there isn't a statement yet from the Vancouver Canucks. And here's the thing. It is more important to get the statement correct than to run it out quickly. It is way more important to do that. So do I imagine a statement is coming? Yeah, probably. If no statement comes, okay, that bit of an issue. But stop demanding results on your timeline for issues that are really important. I think there's a demand to get these messages out because people want to feel a sense of relief rather than actually trying to create progress. You just want to see the statement so you can feel good about the team that you support has these statements. But guess what? The statements and the actions, actually, if you want to talk about diversity, there is a team here that has South Asian Nights, celebrates Diwali, has Lunar New Year, does all these actions to be inclusive into our community here in the Lower Mainland. So if you just need a statement that makes you feel good about yourself, guess what? The actions that the team has taken to be diverse have already been there. And this goes back to listening. If you haven't seen those, and if you haven't recognized those as part of inclusive acts, then the statement's not going to make any difference to you. You're just going to move on to the next thing and wait for the next issue. So yeah, the statement would be nice, but the acts have already been there on behalf of the team as far as being inclusive.
Yeah, and you know, on the other side of the spectrum, we have seen organizations who have, you know, been complicit in racism or benefited from racism, putting out their own statement. but actions speak louder than words, and it has to be all about action. You know, it's easy to send out a press release saying that you condemn what's happening, but you know, you want to know that the organizations you support are not just saying that because it's easy PR right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying it because they mean it and because their actions show it on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, that's what this has to be about. Like, you know, whether an individual organization sends out a press release or sends out a statement or not, what is their track record? What, you know, what have they shown is their, I don't know how to say it, I guess, how have they acted in the past? How have they either potentially enabled racism or worked against racism? And, you know, in terms of you, if you want to be very conscious about, you know, making sure you're not enabling organizations that, you know, don't do the kind of work that you want, then do more research into the teams you support, into the, you know, the companies you buy things from. But you're right. You know, in the Canucks example specifically, we've seen a diligent effort from them to include all members of the community here in the Lower Mainland. And so just because there isn't a press release yet doesn't mean that the Canucks are not an inclusive organization. Now, that said, you do want to still be cynical, is probably not the right word, but critical of any organization you support, that that, you know, anything they're doing is not just surface value, that they actually sure have, you know, the right approach to things, and that they are doing things for the right reason, because it is also easy to just do something to have it appear. And again, that comes back to what you're talking about with tweets over the weekend, and what I was saying about how, you know, this can't just be something that you speak out about for a few days and then go back to your normal life. It's you know, the action has to be behind the words as well. And so, you know, that's how I feel about it anyway. And that's how I think we should be holding to account, whether it's sports teams, whether it's, you know, stores, restaurants, you know, athletic wear companies, whatever it might be. That's the standard that you should be holding people to, is not just their words, but their actions and their track record.
All that being said, we'll hear more about this throughout the day. Myself and Sat are definitely going to talk about it later on today on the program with Andrew Walker, of course. And I'm sure Randeep's going to bring it up here on Reach Deep starting at 1 o'clock. We do still like to have conversations about sports on this show. Jim Benning joined the program on Friday evening. So if you missed some of that, we will unpack a bit on the other side. Thank you for the text that came in, 650, 650. We'll try to read some of those on the other side here on Social Distance Central. Bick Nizar, Brendan Batchelor on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
He did, you know, within his department, he had that autonomy. Like the people we hired last summer, he interviewed them. Those are the people, you know, that he wanted. You know, and he asked for some things that, you know, that were bigger than that, that, you know, as a general manager, that I want to be part of. I come from that background, and, you know, I want to be, like, you know, collaborating on the first two picks and be a part of it. And, you know, that was something that he wanted total control over, and I wasn't willing to go there.
Social Distance Central, Sportsnet 650, Bick Nizar, Brendan Batchelor here for the next 20 minutes. That's the voice of Vancouver Canucks General Manager Jim Benning, who you heard on the station on the program with Andrew Walker and Stat Shaw on Friday evening after a pretty big day where they announced that the contract for Judd Brackett, the director of amateur scouting, will not be renewed. And, you know, we talked about it all throughout the week, and we talked about it on Friday as well, as the news broke right before our show. We didn't necessarily learn anything we didn't already know, but, you know, some of the comments from Jim Benning that Friday evening were quite interesting.
Yeah, certainly they were. And it seems like there is some disagreement publicly, yeah. I guess we could say, about the facts of this case, where you heard Jim saying there coming in from the break that, you know, Judd Brackett was completely involved with the hiring of all their scouts, whereas there have been reports out there that that is not the case at all. And, you know, even Judd in his statement on social media saying that there was a philosophical difference when it came to personnel and sort of the vision, I guess you could say, of his department in terms of the amateur scouting. And so, you know, it's hard to really figure out fact from fiction, but what's clear is that, you know, this was clearly a very acrimonious relationship by the end, and it was one that wasn't going to be able to continue.
Yeah, I think one of my takeaways from that whole interview as well, and just the actions of the team in making this decision, is if we didn't already know, like, now it's all on Jim Benning. And one of the things he says today is like, or the other day, he's like, I had to make a very hard decision, and I went ahead and made it. And this is now, and I don't necessarily mean this as a positive, but like, this team is now 100% in Jim Benning's vision. It's like, you have taken out a part of your organizational depth that was having some success. If that fails in really any regard, if it slips by 20%, forget even just not even getting players. If you're getting just okay guys, that's going to fall on Jim Benning's shoulder when you make decisions like these. We talk so much about, you know, you don't get to hire a lot of coaches as a GM, because if you're constantly having turnover, eventually the question's going to get turned to you and you get removed. Well, he's making a decision here of removing someone in the organization that's having success. So if that doesn't continue, the question's going to get pointed at you. And I'm just curious of, if this continues to go poorly, like, what's the timeline for Jim Benning, right? Everything gets accelerated now because he's made this decision, and it all falls on him now.
Yeah, he's really betting on himself, and, you know,
which is fine to do.
And the organization is betting on him, too.
Yes.
Because
we've seen
that.
But then you have
much.
To be right.
No, exactly. You do. So there's a lot more pressure on Jim Benning now because of the fact that Trevor Linden is no longer there, and Judd Brackett. And, you know, you could list all the scouts that they've decided to remove from the organization as well. It is very clear, you know, whether you like it or not, whether you agree with it or not, this is Jim Benning and John Weisbrod's show, and they are running it. So, you know, we really have to judge where things go from here based on how, you know, Jim Benning, and to a slightly lesser extent, John Weisbrod, are able to steer this ship going forward. You know, most people, I think, would agree they seem to have a really good head coach in Travis Green, who has a great understanding of working with these young players. And even though this team has struggled over the last couple of years, he's got a lot more out of this team than maybe others would have. And, you know, he's very diligent in trying to work to have this team improve on a day-to-day and game-by-game basis. But, yeah, when you make the decisions that the management group has in Vancouver, you are really betting on yourself, which means if things go well, you can take a lot, if not all of the credit. But if things go poorly, you are taking a lot, if not all of the blame.
And Jim Benning did speak about his message to the fans as well. And he said something to the effect of, this doesn't change because, you know, their first goal is to continue to get NHL players. They're going to continue to do good work. They're going to continue to develop the players and start building towards that championship team. So just because someone is removed from the process does not mean that process will not continue. So his exact words were, if you're nervous about it, rest assured, don't be nervous. We got everything in control. We're going to continue to do good work in the draft and be successful. And so, you know, when you make statements like that, that's the expectation from fans moving forward, that because something was working, and I know that the conversation has been a bit overblown as far as, you know, fans are probably learning who Judd Brackett is to some degree too, but that's because there's been immense success in the department. And that's why this has become such a huge issue, that if that doesn't continue, people are going to start pinning it on Jim Benning. So, you know, he doubled down himself on himself over the past weekend. And like, that's my immediate conclusion of it's now we're 100% on Jim. He's running out of excuses to make. He's willingly decreased the margin of error.
He has. And, you know, also the situation is going to make this very hard to analyze from a scouting perspective because, you know, and I'm not saying that, you know, I'm picking one side or the other in this conversation, but the Canucks were a very bad team while Judd Brackett was here. They had very high picks. Obviously, they never won the lottery, but they were picking in the top 10. And there is still the possibility that the Canucks pick in the top 10 this year if things don't go well in the Minnesota series and all of that. But chances are this team is going to be better than that. So that puts that much more pressure on the scouting department that, hey, you've got to find a good player to meet these expectations, but now you've got to find it somewhere in the 15 to 20th pick range in the first round, as opposed to, you know, top five picks or top 10 picks that we've seen over the last few years. So it really is going to be very hard to analyze where the scouting department goes from here, because unless the Canucks, you know, either win the lottery after, you know, hypothetically losing to Minnesota, or unless they really take a step back in the next few years, in which case Jim Benning won't be the general manager anyway, they're not going to have the same quality of pick that they did under Judd Brackett. So, you know, this might be a debate that rages on forever about where the scouting department went after Judd Brackett left, because A, they may not have a pick in the first two rounds this year. If they do, the likelihood of it being as good of a selection as the one that took Elias Pettersson or Quinn Hughes is very unlikely. So, you know, it might be entirely impossible to say with certainty, you know, how the Judd Brackett departure has an impact on the Canucks scouting department. But the point being that that's even more pressure on Benning, because now people are going to expect that he finds a way to hit on mid to late first round picks.
Precisely. Right. It's increased the expectation for him that, you know, when we go into these drafts, there's so much discussion about, you know, do you pick the right player, right? We have debates of Cody Glass and Elias Pettersson. We have debates of Vasily Podkolzin or Cole Caulfield or Matt, whatever it is, Matt Boldy, that, you know, fans are going to start positioning themselves again for the next prospect that we talk about, whether it be this year or whether it be next year. And suddenly, when you make a pick that is outside the framework of, you know, fans' expectations, the ire of the fans is going to be hotter, directed at one particular individual now because he's put it all on himself.
But at the same time, Elias Pettersson was a pick that fans weren't expecting either.
Yes.
That's worked out pretty well. So, you know, if I'm Jim Benning, I wouldn't want to be worrying about that. And in fact, if I'm a Canuck fan, if the management group is worrying about what the fans think of their decisions, then that is not a good situation. Because, you know, as much as there are many people out there that vehemently disagree with many of the things that Jim Benning has done as general manager of the Canucks, as we heard on Game of Takes last week, the fact of the matter is you want the person in power making the decisions they feel are the best. And this is an organization that took Elias Pettersson when many people thought they should have taken Cody Glass, and that has worked out. So, you know, you hope anyway that Jim Benning doesn't worry about what the fans think. But that said, you know, the pressure is still very high on him to continue to produce solid prospects for this organization while also trying to help the team on the ice improve to a point where it can win.
So we heard from you talk about Game of Takes. Congrats to Chris for winning that, who won on Friday. So what we're going to do is present the topics for this week, and you've got a chance to chime in and get your chance to win for this week. We asked Chris on Friday what he wanted to talk about, and he said the future of goaltending is going to be this week's topic. So you will have your chance to chime in. We'll put it up on Twitter at Sportsnet650. If you want to challenge a throne, Chris K's throne at Chris K Films, you got a chance to take him down. And in this week's version of Game It Takes, we're going to be talking about the future of the goaltending.
Yeah, and you know, the future of the goaltending is an interesting topic. It's one that we will get into ourselves as the week carries forward, with Jacob Markstrom being an unrestricted free agent now. But, you know, does COVID play a factor in whether the Canucks are able to re-sign him and whether they sign him long-term or to a shorter-term deal? Do you believe that Thatcher Demko is, you know, the goalie to be, you know, the goaltender of the future, I guess, is the tag we always put on it in Vancouver. You know, do you have the faith that Thatcher Demko can be the guy, you know, going forward, so that maybe they could move away from Jacob Markstrom, not necessarily right now, but in a year or two? Or do you think that they should, you know, continue with Jacob Markstrom and use Thatcher Demko as a trading chip? There's many different ways that you can go in terms of this conversation, but we want to hear from you. Send us your tweets, send us your texts, and you could have a chance to be on the air going up against Chris Keene on Friday.
So we'll be doing that online. So look for that at Sportsnet650. The other thing we're doing, we did it last week with Yannick Hansen. We are doing the mailbag, where you get to chime in any of your questions for a person of dignity, a dignified member of Canucks history. So we are bringing on Derek Dorsett tomorrow. So you got chances to ask Derek whatever you want to ask. You just got to chime in at Batch Hockey, at Bick650, at Sportsnet650, and also into our 650-650 text message inbox. We'll give you an opportunity to basically get your questions to Derek tomorrow here on Social Distance Central.
Yeah, looking forward to that. We had a lot of fun with Yannick Hansen last week. So anything you want to ask Derek Dorsett, maybe about life after hockey. Certainly the way his career ended was not ideal when it comes to how you imagine guys sort of choosing when they're going to walk away and riding off into the sunset. And so any questions about that? Of course, he's a big part of Vancouver hockey history, not just because of his time with the Canucks, but of course he was a part of that Medicine Hat Tiger team that had those great matchups with the Vancouver Giants back in 2007 in the Western Hockey League final and in the Memorial Cup as well. So anything you want to ask Derek Dorsett, send us your questions and we will ask some of them to the man himself tomorrow on the show.
That's all coming up tomorrow on Social Distance Central. Dan Riccio, Randeep Janda, Reach Deep on the way. Chris Johnson will join them at 3 o'clock, as he usually does on Mondays. All coming up here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.